Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 48, recorded Friday, November 3rd, 2006. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Three topics on today's Travel Commons Podcast: frequent flyer investment strategies, and two travel tech topics: measuring hotel bandwidth and Bose lust. This week, coming to you today from the Rancho Las Palmas Resort and Spa in lovely Rancho Mirage, California, just down the road from even lovelier, or maybe not as lovely, Palm Springs. This is my only stop this week. I'm here for a three-day conference. It's my first time in Palm Springs, and I didn't quite know what to expect. It's kind of an interesting airport. I arrived in the sunny Bono Concourse, and there seemed to be more seating outside than inside. And, you know, it kind of reminded me of some of the California airports 20 years ago, San Jose, Santa Ana, before they got their big makeovers in the 90s. They were small, quaint, comfortable, had a bit of local charm. I picked up my rental car keys from the counter, no Hertz Gold Canopy service here, and saw that I had, for the second week in a row, been upgraded to a Buick LaCrosse, a big white boat. Well, you know, it's not like I'd be doing a bunch of driving anyhow this week. But when I walked up to Space 57, there was a silver convertible Mustang. I looked down at my keys, and hey, I've got a Ford key fob instead of a GM one. Could I get this lucky? Nah, they'd turn me back at the exit booth. You always have to show your rental car agreement. But as I drove to the rental lot exit, I didn't see a booth. And it, you know, just like San Jose Airport in the old days, they give you your keys and off you go. I stopped at the light, dropped the top, and headed out in search of Highway 111. I'm heading back to Chicago this morning, and I hope to get in town soon enough to cast an absentee ballot, since I'll be out west in San Francisco this time on Election Day. Ed Vauder of the Searching the Internet podcast has put out a podcast with a review of voter information sites that provide information about candidates and the issues. Good, nice pre-election edition. I'll put a link to his podcast in the show notes. Following up, first a pretty significant correction from our last podcast. If you remember, I related the story of Casey Milch and her two-day ordeal trying to get home from Miami. I received an email from Casey at the beginning of the week. Mark, thanks for playing my story. Oh, and by the way, I'm a guy. Casey, I guess, is kind of like Robin, but in my case, I'm Casey at the Bat, signed Mr. Casey Milch. Thanks for that gentle correction, Casey. You know, I'll tell you, the English language needs a gender-neutral third-person singular pronoun for just this reason. The Wall Street Journal's middle seat column gave air this week to complaints about over-the-top TSA screeners who were throwing out, like, single travel-size bottles of, say, shampoo because that one bottle hadn't been put in a quart-size Ziploc bag. And the whole column was just about, you know, TSA screeners who'd kind of taken the procedures to the nth degree. I mean, even TSA Secretary Kip Hawley, interviewed for the column, had to admit that some screeners weren't exercising good judgment and that some procedures were being altered. You know, we've talked in past podcasts about sort of that Barney Fife mentality of some of the TSA screeners. Give them a badge and away they go. Listeners have shared stories of rude and even belligerent treatment at TSA screening posts. Hillary Bauman of the Clothing Cult blog sent in an audio clip with her latest TSA experience in Lexington, Kentucky's Bluegrass Airport.
I wanted to tell you about my recent encounter with airport security. A few weeks ago, I dropped off my parents at Bluegrass Airport. I was on my way home when my mother called to tell me that she had forgotten the power cord to her laptop, and they were already past security. I asked her to go back and see if they would even let the power cord through, since it wasn't going to be a short drive back to pick it up. They said it would be fine. When I got back to the airport, I noticed the number of signs that say absolutely, positively, no parking in the loading area. There were almost no cars unloading or loading, and no other easy place to quickly park, run in, and run out, so I decided it was worth the risk to park in the loading zone while I ran in with the power cord. Once in, I remember the line. It was short, but not moving as fast as my now-parked-in-the-tow-zone self was comfortable with. I had my cell phone, my keys, and a power cord, but no baggage, and I was standing in line now, looking antsy and out of place. I was sure I was going to end up with a full body search, interrogation, and my car towed. I saw my mother on the other side. She waved, I waved back, and I was then approached by a serious-looking security officer holding, not wearing, a pair of blue latex gloves. I was expecting the worst. All he said was, "You're the one with the power cord, right?" I said yes, handed it over, he now walked off, and I watched him put it in the container to send through security. Now that that was taken care of, I was off. I started into a light jog when I heard on the intercom audio that parking in the loading zone was no longer allowed for any reason. I then had more mental images of being tackled by security officers because surely someone running out of the airport should be tackled. But no such thing occurred. My car was still there, no tow truck in sight, no tickets, no fines, no one to tell me that I was not to park my car in the loading zone ever again, nothing, nada. Despite all the rules that I broke in the process of getting this power cord to my mother, it was completely and utterly untraumatic other than what went through my head. Anyway, I hope you and your listeners enjoy this story. Take care.
Hillary, thanks for that story. It's nice to hear about TSA screeners with reasonable Andy Griffith mentalities also. Hey, and thanks to everyone who contributes their thoughts and stories, the voice of the traveler. The email address, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or you can post them at the travelcommons.com website. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is frequent flyer investment strategies. You know, I mentioned in Travel Commons number 38 that I'm taking the family down to Cape Town, South Africa next March for 2 weeks at spring break. Of course, I mentioned that in May, but didn't quite get round to thinking about ringing up the frequent flyer line for tickets until last month, October. So I called American Airlines first. You know, I had the most miles in the bank with them, and they charged the least for a seat to Africa, 75,000 miles per coach seat. But more importantly than that, I've really had the best experience with the folks on American's frequent flyer desk working hard to give me free seats. And I talked about this also in Travel Commons number 38. They went out of their way to find me seats to Sweden in July, so that I could pick up my new Saab. And then again, last summer, they really went out of their way to get us seats for our summer vacation in France and Hungary. Unfortunately, though, third time was not lucky for me and American, though, again, it was not for lack of trying. The agents just spun and spun, but they just couldn't line up available flights between Chicago and Europe with available flights between Europe and South Africa. I mean, they ran through all their oneworld partners, BA, Swissair, Iberia, but they had no luck. So I went next to United. I mean, with South Africa Airways part of the Star Alliance, I thought they might have a bit more inventory available. Now, the first offer from the United rep pulled me up a bit short. Chicago to Hong Kong to Singapore to Cape Town. Not what I expected, but, you know, I decided to keep an open mind about this. I'd recalled a note I'd received back in August from Dan Rose, a listener in Australia. Dan writes, "Into Cape Town, something you might like to consider is routing through Perth to Johannesburg. While I understand that going from the USA to South Africa is certainly a lot different to the routing I take from Australia, the Perth to Johannesburg flight, in my opinion, is one of the best in the world. It's a long, boring flight, but you can sleep the entire time, arrived refreshed, and there's generally very little turbulence. I even recommend people going either via Johannesburg or Mumbai when going to the UK because it's just an easier routing on your body anyway than going the kangaroo route through Singapore or Hong Kong. Well, there you go, and that's what I was getting proposed was the kangaroo route. It was interesting, but adding up the flight time, flying through the back door, to steal Rick Steves' line, was going to add another 5 or 6 hours of flight time, the equivalent of a San Francisco to New York run. And while doing an around-the-world routing, going across the Pacific outbound and coming back across the Atlantic, while it was tempting, the wife and the kids absolutely vetoed it. So we ended up with a front-door itinerary. Chicago to Frankfurt on Lufthansa, and then down to Cape Town on South Africa Airways. The reason, though, that I was able to make this switch is really because of my frequent traveler program strategy, where I try and strike a balance between focus and diversification. Sounds like an investment strategy, and perhaps it is. I consciously give up the opportunity to make top tier, American's Executive Platinum, United's 1K. On one airline, in order to balance miles and status across multiple carriers. And I guess part of the decision comes from, what do you want to get out of a given program? For airlines, is it more important to be able to use your miles or get front cabin upgrades? Now, I tend toward the former. I use my miles to fund our vacations. And by having miles across a number of airlines, American, United, Northwest, Southwest, hey, I got a lot of options. There's a price for that flexibility, though. I don't score as many upgrades as I could. I'm more often than not losing out to the top tier guys. It kind of works for other programs too. Now, I am top tier at Marriott, but I also have points spread across Starwood, Hilton, and Hyatt. And back again to my summer Sweden vacation, when I was planning it, I was surprised to find out that there weren't any Marriotts in the country. However, I was able to use my Starwood points to book a nice room at the Sheraton near the train station and use my Hilton points to pay for 2 rooms at the Scandic Hotel downtown. It is really an investment decision. Where am I going to invest my scarce resources, my travel dollars, my flight segments or hotel nights, my travel experience, my travel time? How you invest it depends on what you're looking to get out of it. Second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, travel tech. And first up on travel tech, putting a yardstick to hotel bandwidth. I have started a bit of an unscientific survey checking the broadband speeds of the hotels I stay at. I've been using the test at the Speakeasy, I think it's .net website. I'll put up a link in the show notes because this test measures upload speeds as well as download speeds. Most DSL and cable services, at least in the US, are engineered as asymmetric services, much higher download speeds than upload speeds. And the rationale being that a typical web user downloads a whole lot of bytes, web page graphics, music, streaming, video, for each single byte they upload. However, this assumption doesn't always apply, especially for business users. And let's face it, the majority of frequent travelers are business users. Syncing my Outlook mailbox after a 4-hour flight to the West Coast, I'll tell you, there's just as many bytes going up the wire as coming down, if not more. Queue up a couple of 3-meg PowerPoint files in the Outbox, and you're going to get a beer. Testing the SFO Marriott, the San Francisco Airport Marriott, last week gave me pretty typical results, about 600 kilobytes per second download and about 170 kilobytes per second upload, all for the low, low price of $9.95 a day. Now, just as a point of reference, I think it's $30 a month SBC DSL line at home gives me 2.5 megabits per second, that's 2,500 kilobits per second, down, and 512 kilobits per second up. Now, I was also at Houston last week, and so I had a chance to check out the free hookup at the downtown courtyard, fired up the speakeasy test, 4.2 megabits per second down, 840 kilobits per second up. Oh my God. I ran the test two more times, same result. It was amazing. I was so excited. I just didn't know what to do next. Fire up BitTorrent or go for LimeWire. Nope, just kidding. Just kidding. But I started to think about it. It was 4:30 in the afternoon. I wondered if this would hold up at night when everybody was in their room, you know, hitting email and other online entertainment, I guess we could call it, offerings. Sure enough, at 9:30 that night, Speakeasy reported 430 kilobits per second down, 370 kilobits up. So the download speed had dropped an order of magnitude, a whole decimal place. It was a tenth of what it was at 4:30 in the afternoon, while the upload was only cut in half. Here at the Rancho Mirage, it's been pretty consistent, 600 kilobits up and down throughout the day across the 3 days that I've been here, all for the low, low price of $12.95 a day. I'll post the Speakeasy link in the show notes, and if you get a chance, run a test during your next hotel stay. Send me the results. What'd you get up and down? What was the hotel? What time was it? Because we've seen the time factor here, and what was the hotel charge, if any? And I'll sort of bundle them up and periodically post them on the website. Next up on Travel Tech, Bose Lust. You know, I haven't talked about my Bose noise-canceling headphones lately, but they're still with me on every flight. On my flight to LAX on Tuesday, the guy sitting next to me was sort of lingering over the Bose ad for the QC3s, their new on-ear headphones that was in the Hemisphere magazine. I flew United out on Tuesday. He looked at my over-the-ear QC2s, a bit longingly, I might add, and asked if I'd tried the new ones. I hadn't, but I shared with him the comment that Finn, I am going to butcher your last name, Shoyen, so it's S-C-H-O with a slash through it, Y-E-N. I'm sorry. So I shared with him the comment that Finn, that Finn posted on the website under Travel Commons number 34. I've tried noise-canceling headphones from various other brands before I decided to buy myself a pair of them Bose Quiet Comfort 2 you talk so highly about. They're bloody marvelous. Screaming kids, engine noise, you name it, gone. I've been meaning to get my hands on them for a long time, but other priorities forced me to postpone the purchase until, that is, one of my vendors gave me a 35% discount, probably because they're going to stock the new QC3 for the same price as the QC2 now cost. I even got a chance to try both of them out, and I must say, even though the QC3 has a more advanced noise-canceling circuitry, their on-ear design, as opposed to the QC2's over-ear design, isn't something I'm comfortable with, so I decided to get the QC2 instead. My roommate said that he had a pair of QC2s also, but had left them in the seat back pocket a few flights back. He said he called the airline as soon as he noticed them missing. But the customer rep just chuckled. Oh, she said, those, they are long gone. You know, there's a bit of a cult in the airplane cabin around Bose. Looking around the first class cabin, and I had scored a rare first class upgrade on my way out Tuesday. Maybe because I was flying out Halloween afternoon, and everybody, all the big flyers were staying at home trick or treating with their kids. But anyhow, in the first class cabin, at least a third of the passengers were wearing Bose cans. Indeed, it's not that rare to see guys wearing their Bose into the toilet. Now, I was behind one Bose-wearing guy in the toilet line a few weeks back, and after he went in and locked the door, I looked at the flight attendants and said, you know, You may want to step back. I'm not sure if he wore those noise-canceling headphones in there for a reason. They looked at me for a moment and then just broke up laughing, which started again when the guy walked out of the toilet. He looked a little confused. Well, anyhow, back to my LAX roommate. Talking with him, we agreed that there's a trade-off between size and comfort. The over-the-ear QC2s are the most comfortable for me on a long flight, but I'll tell you, they don't easily fit into a briefcase. Something's got to give. The in-ears are much more convenient, but they irritate my ear canals on a four-hour flight. Not everybody agrees with that, though. Nick Gassman dropped me the following note last week. He said, "You mentioned noise-canceling headphones from time to time, and in particular the Bose ones. I haven't actually used those, but have tried a number of other models. After a lot of tryouts, I've settled on the Shure E3 in-ear buds." Try to say that three times fast. Although Nick says he does have his eye on the E4Gs. The E3s, he says, project into the ear canal and make a seal, with the result that, in my opinion, they are more effective at noise reduction than the active phones. The sound quality is excellent. They come with different sizes and types of earbuds, so they'll fit most people. Hey, well, thanks to Nick and Finn for your input, and just kind of confirms the old saying, silence is golden. Though given the price of the Bose, perhaps it should be amended and requires some gold to achieve, too. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 48. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast and hope you decide to stay subscribed. And if you do like this podcast, I've got a bit of an extra ask today. Tell a friend about Travel Commons. Ever since iTunes rejiggered their categories and their taxonomy back last summer, I haven't been able to get Travel Commons to show up when you search on travel. So, other than pure luck, I don't know how new listeners are going to be able to find this. So if you like what we're doing, spread the word if you feel comfortable. Tell a friend, write about us in a blog. I don't know, send a note to the travel editor of your local newspaper. You think about it, but I really appreciate it. Hey, we have a new bridge music provider on today's show, Magnatune. That's the label with the tagline, "We are not evil." I guess that sounds like a good thing to me. The songs in order, Golden Rose by Miles Cochran, Ika by Phallic, Entry by Cargo Cult, and Homebound by Jag. You can check the show notes for the artist details, and they're all available at magnatune.com. If you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or MP3 file to comments@travelcommons.com. Comments, COMMENTS, @travelcommons.com, or post them on our website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who's taken the time to send in emails, audio file, or post comments on the website. And until the next time, safe travels, and thanks for coming by the Travel Commons.
Home alone, life is hell. Bed in a lonely motel, but one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,